Hello, everyone. Let's check you can hear me, please. Let me know. Great, thank you. Thanks, Sue. Hello. Hello, Peter. Hi, Plage.
There we go.
Yeah, got you.
Okay. Put that one on.
No headset today?
It keeps going wrong, so I thought I'd try it without first, because it's like the sound wouldn't come through it. It's probably the headset that's wrong all along, so I have to probably get a new one or something. Or take it down to the shop first anyway.
I think it's probably anyway, just something in your settings. It would be something in your settings.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get rid of one of you.
Oh yeah, two of me again.
I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't get rid of you.
No. So we can do it then. Yeah. Well, one of me hasn't got sound anywhere, so it should be all right.
Okay. All right then, where are we? We're just past the hour, so.
Yeah, about time, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So welcome everybody. It's December. You wouldn't know it. The sun is shining. No, it was silly hot here today. Well, I think it was silly hot here today. I don't know. I've actually been trapped in my room all day with the curtains closed, door shut. So I wouldn't really know, trying to sleep. So, yes, welcome to December anyway. So I wonder what it's like where you are. We have today's Q&A, which will finish at the hour because we move on into the workshop that we have at 1:30 the next hour, wherever you are. And today's Q&A, Peter, will be talking about, what are you talking about today, Peter?
It's about magical helpers. Following exactly from the blog about recently.
So he's going to be he's going to be talking about magical helps in the Q&A. And then in the workshop, we have healing the adolescent. So, Peter, just a quick word about the workshop that's going to be happening very soon.
We're following from the one we did on the inner child. We've got to realise that adolescence is far more complex. So we're going into more details and what kind of shame they pick up and what the issues are. So we can start healing that both in yourself, but also for those who have adolescents with them. We give them good ideas of how to actually bring them up healthily. But mostly it's for healing your inner adolescent, which leads to your martyrhood and these other issues.
Thank you very much. So the article to the link to the article, The Magical Helpers, has just gone in the chat. If any of you have not read that already, those of you who are in our workshop membership, please make sure that you have registered so that you can receive the link for today's workshop so that you can join us at the time. And if you have not joined our magical membership, but you would like to come, you can. There's still the opportunity to do so. And the link will be put in the chat very, very shortly. Just a couple of other notes from me. Peter, you have a new bio weapon shield talisman up on the website. Did you want to say a note about that, please?
It's made for all the new bioweapons coming out because this COVID isn't the last of it. There's all kinds of new ones coming out to keep producing new viruses. And we need to make sure we upgrade the immune system so I can deal with all those things because they get quite nasty. So it's made basically to upgrade the immune system so you don't pick up all these new viruses.
So you can take a look at that on the website. Peter, I'm going to ask you to pull your computer lid towards you because we don't really see, we see more of your window than you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. So that's that. And I know that the newsletter has gone out informing you of all of these things, but it's always nice to hear it from Peter himself. A question that we have. Now, we have recently finished round two of online point holding. So some of you may have joined the point holding part one, where we did all of the theory and we had the workshops online. And then part two was where we gathered online and we did point holding sessions together in the online environment. This has gone successfully well, and Peter would like to know if there are any of you who would like to continue with these online point holding sessions. So just like we have the monthly workshops on a Saturday where you are a member, we would have a membership group for point holding sessions. So once a month we would gather online and then Peter would guide all of us through an online point holding session. So Peter, what's the benefit of people coming to these online point holding sessions?
Helps keep you focused, basically. Make sure you know you've got some guidance with you, some bit of backup. Really, it sets a space, a time where you actually do your work, and I'll be there supporting a bit. I mean, you can do this on your own, just the extra bit of support.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing is the accountability to actually sit down and do the work, as Peter just said, because we know what it's like. It's one of those things that we put off. But also I can, from firsthand experience, say that I've been doing the online point holding sessions on my own, and they are far more powerful when I replay the sessions with Peter and I receive his attunements through the recordings than if I was to just sit down and do the point holding session by myself. So it really does help to have Peter alongside you whilst you're doing those point holding sessions. So at this time, we're just gathering interest. So if you would like to join a regular monthly online point holding session, then please do pop your name in the chat.
Even every 2 months, if some people don't want to do every month, some people suggest that. So you can put your own ideas in and how often you'd like to do them, and we'll work with that.
Great. And if you are interested and you want to join us, you must have completed the online part one point holding, online part one ultimate healing, first of all. That is a prerequisite. So you must have completed online point holding part. Oh, I've done it again. Online ultimate healing part one. All right. So, and if you're not sure if you qualify or not, just give us your name anyway, and then we'll talk to you. And then the next thing that I would like to talk about is we're going to continue with the topic of body electronics and point holding. Some very exciting news is that on next year, 2023, in May, Peter, what's happening?
We are doing an in-person point holding course for 3 weeks, working on the body, working on the spine, and also the cranial, all the bits you couldn't do on your own.
Yes, indeed. So next year we are busy scurrying behind the scenes to organize the first in a long time in-person point holding body electronics intensive course, the 3 weeks that some of you may be very familiar with, where we work on the endocrine system in week one, spinal in week two, and cranium in week three. And that will be taking place here in Thailand in the city of Chiang Mai. So I'm letting you know about this now because I want you all to get excited. The dates are 8th of May through to the 27th of May. And there will also be the opportunity whilst you are here in Thailand to do an ancillary course. You can do Dragon Magic in person with Peter as well. So he will be putting that on the end of the body electronics course. I'm not going to go into too much details here about prices and logistics or anything like that. The information is going up on the website. If you do have a specific question or your curiosity is burning, then please do pop that in the chat and I'll be happy to answer them. But I don't want to take up any more time with that logistical information. I just wanted you to know, May next year, it's happening. In-person point holding. Great. And then tomorrow we have our students Q&A, where Peter will be talking about co-creation and unicorns. So please do make sure that you've read the information about that and come prepared with your questions. And then next month in January, we will be holding a workshop on how to deal with death and loss. So lots of stuff to come up. I'm going to pass over to Peter and I will be in the chat for any of you with questions or concerns. Thank you.
Okay, let's spotlight me. So hello. So I've covered most of ideas of magical helpers on my blog. I want to do it a little bit further and then open to questions. But basically, there have been a few questions already, so I want to kind of talk a bit more just to kind of clear a few things up. What I've described in the blog about jinn, the Mawakil with the angels and demons and the devils, people ask where do gods fit in? Well, first I want to explain that that word didn't exist in those early days. The word God actually came from Goda, who was a Norse sea goat. It doesn't come from something like Jehovah. The word's completely different if you look at it. What happened when Christianity was kind of coming across Europe and taking over the pagan countries, they had to kind of use some of their words and some of their festivals to actually keep people interested. Otherwise, people didn't like giving up their festivals, their celebrations. So they took over all the kind of pagan festivals and gave them Christian names, but also they took some of the ancient names of their deities. Goda, who was a Norse sea goat, actually a goddess. That's where the name God comes from. God wasn't a universal word then. Since then, it's become a universal word for all deities, but actually, that's not how it was in the old days. That's why that word hasn't been used in my blog. And a god can quite often, there's confusion about it, because often people see it as the one consciousness over everything, well, the kind of small pieces. It's difficult to say which of these beings is a god. See, many of the deities in those days were the jinn, the Mawakil, and so on. In the old Arabic system, there was over 400 gods, deities. That's been long before Islam, of course, when Allah was only one of them. He then became like the one top god, just like Jehovah did in the Jewish system, when he was only one of many gods. So there were over 400 of these deities. Most of these are seen as jinn. So you've got the basic jinn deities, and under them they have the other jinn, which is spelled slightly different. It's still called jinn, but with different spelling. Hard to transcribe into English because the Arabic letters are a bit different. But basically, the spirits which help you personally with jinn, and their gods are called jinn. So that's why you haven't used that word, because it gets confusing. So first of all, that's where that one fits in. So basically in the hierarchy, you might consider the devils to be gods, which is a bit of a kind of backwards from what people consider them to be nowadays. But actually, if you look at the name Goda again, and the way how it relates to a goat, they took the name for a god, and yet they took the form for a devil. You see how there's been a kind of splitting to duality here, which has confused people. Actually, they're one and the same. The devils weren't seen as evil. However, there was an old myth here where the kind of Jehovah that time had actually created the world, and he wanted to destroy it because he didn't like it. It was all corrupt. And Iblis, who's one of the first devils of this world, said, "No, I'll look after it." So basically, Iblis was the kind of devil watching over our world. He's like the god in a way. But since then, they show him with the devil and see it as an evil. But this is not how it was in the original system. There was no duality. Nothing in creation was meant to be evil. Even the word evil is kind of a bit twisted because it comes from another name of a goddess, actually. The Irish goddess Evil actually meant beautiful, the name. What happened, though, there was an old play about this goddess Evil, who actually, because one of her functions was to actually punish men who didn't satisfy their wives. At those times, you know, they wanted the priests to get married. The Christian priests thought that was a horrendous idea, so her name became associated with anything bad. So that's how that word got twisted. So a great deal of superstition should be added to that. There is really no negative force that was created as such. Negativity simply comes from the imbalance of forces or our misuse of them. None of these forces are in their own nature wrong or bad. There are things which can do dark things, yes, because they kind of don't have their own discrimination over your world. They want to help you, they do what you ask, and they don't measure our morality. So quite often the things considered evil are not the being evil, that's people's use of them. Some beings are better at that, of course. For instance, in voodoo, you'd find the Loire into what they call Vata and Petra. They're not good and evil, rather heavenly forces, with Petra are earthly and aggressive. Obviously, you're protective ones there because you want the warrior spirits. They're not necessarily evil in their nature, but they can be aggressive. That's the difference. Aggressive isn't necessarily evil. We need a certain level of aggression to maintain our boundaries and protect ourselves, to assert ourselves. That's the Martian force in the astrology. We need the whole balance of them. So in this hierarchy, there isn't really black and white. Yes, I spoke about the Numerical and the Numerical. They're not seen as good and evil, though. Numerical are light, Numerical are black flame. They have different uses, that's all. Light forces are making for our spirituality, our evolution, our awakening, raising the Kundalini, taking us to enlightenment. The black flame is a source of magic. They're the ones who get things done. They create the physical results. We all need that if we want to actually shape our world. And this is where there's been this big split in religions. Quite often those who have these kind of one-god religions who don't want people to be materialistic say that magic is bad, you don't deal with it. They're the same ones who say, no, everything's the will of Allah or whatever. You do everything by the will of Allah. You don't do anything yourself to create your own reality. This is not where the magician works. It's like a split here again, you see. As a magician, by our own nature, we want to shape our own reality, create our dreams, not just leave it to fate. As the will of God. What is God? It's within all of us. Our true will is the will of God. The idea of the magician is to find your true will by going through your self-reflection, going to layers of intent, find what the bottom line is, what you're really here for, what you really want underneath everything. That is perfectly aligned to everybody else because we all have come here fitting in a divine plan where we're all cooperating on some level to create a better world. And we all want to use our skills, bring out our full powers, cooperate with others to create the world we want. We co-create. So our true will is basically the will of God. It's not separate, but we have to find it and use it. This way we have to overcome that duality, you see. We're not going against God in order to do magic. We're co-creating. And although there is one source of awareness, that doesn't discriminate because this is pure awareness. The different gods have different personalities because they've come down a step lower. They've met the resistance and taken different forms and so on. They have different personalities, different characteristics, different powers. We're still co-creating with them, though. We're still us making a certain level of choice. So when we're shaping our reality, we are basically exerting a will, not just leaving things to the will of God. And this does actually use the darker side, which is not evil by its nature. It's what shapes matter. Even the word Satan came from Shaitan, the opposer, is the law of matter. Everything in the physical world is experiences resistance. Basic law of physics, every action has an equal opposite reaction. Like, for instance, you wouldn't fly without understanding how to balance opposite forces. When you fly in an aeroplane, for instance, you're not breaking the law of gravity, you're balancing gravity with aerodynamics, opposition forces. We actually measure, get through our life by understanding opposition. Shaitan was the law of opposition, the opposer, therefore the law of matter. So none of these forces in the nature were how people think about them now. They're not bad, they're not wrong. You can't have something that goes against God. How could there be if this one creator created everything? Or would he create something that goes against him and has any power over him? Not possible. So basically these helpers, we don't really use the word God because this is already a twisted philosophy. Came from Goda, who is one particular deity. The North Sea goat at that, you know, she's an important goddess because the sea was about fertility and the goat was seen as a fertile being. She's a mother goddess. And it's interesting how they try and make that into male. But actually taking the A off of the end to make God, Goda into God was in a way of making it male, because all the, in most of the different ancient languages, all the things with A in the end were feminine. Or rather the R sound was a very sound of creation itself. First letter of the Hebrew alphabet and of the Arabic alphabet, and even in the hieroglyphs, was a silent A. But it's actually what the true name of Ra comes from. When you can actually sense that silent sound, it's a sound of creation. You take that off the end of the word, you're taking something off it, of its power, of its magic. So when they take Goda and take the end of off and make it God, you've actually somehow limited it. Take away the feminine, which is seen as the power of the universe, the magical force. And to say, we're taking away magic away at it. Away now, you would have to do everything we say and just surrender and know this is right for you. That's all manipulation, if you look at it. This is not created by religion, this is created by the leaders of the various governments who want to control everybody. If you look along the how religions are developed alongside governments, each government is aligned to a religion, which makes it the one religion, say this is the one who's right, if he's going to follow it, that's easy to control everybody. And if you accept the will of God, that whatever is happening to you is right, don't argue, you just stay with it. This way nobody rebels against all the government's control. That's how that works. So when you look at the real magical helpers, we're looking at some much ancient languages here. That's why you haven't used the word God, because that's actually quite twisted. You can call them deities, what you like, but there's only different levels of spiritual helpers. That's why it's good to actually identify them this way. You know, the jinn, the marakil, the devils, the dragons, the shining ones. These ultimate levels of creation. Actually, shining ones are seen as the highest, but they're not formed. These are the preconceptual energies. When we do the shining one course, for instance, we actually look up to the major cover of the tarot as a way into them, because these are conceptualizations of the preconceptual. People don't see them as actual beings. You've got the magician or high priestess, you don't think as a being. You don't represent something. And this is a preconceptual energy. This is where the shining ones are. Everything that's below that has been formed. Anything formed is not as high as that, you see. The creator itself is undefinable. As you come through different levels of resistance, things will take on function and then form. So the highest beings is not something we can define. Shining ones are the highest we can reach in our understanding. We can just about touch upon them. Beyond that, it's like way beyond our mind. Closest ones to us are those more on our level, the fairies and the jinn and so on, because they're parallel worlds. They understand what it is like to be on this level, having form and so on. I won't say physical, because they make their world as physical as we make ours. To them, we are the spirits. People often think it's jinn and fairies as spirits, but they make their world as real as we make ours. And they see us as spirits. The fae, for instance, have their human tales, as we have fairy tales. So it is all about making how we make our world real. But it's the same level, actually, because we've created function and form. That form is based on the function we've chosen. These are all the lowest levels of creation. Low doesn't mean somehow less. It just means this is coming down to more dense form, where we're here in the physical form. So the jinn and the fairies are closest in a way. Of course, the elementals which live in the ethers between. And then, of course, we have moved up to the upper worlds. We've got your ancestral spirits, the animals, and we've got the kind of higher levels of jinn, the marakil. So on, the dragons, the shining ones. So these are all things we can call upon for help. Why? Because in some level they're part of us. See, when we first came out of the oneness, we were pure awareness. That awareness has a thought, and that thought creates a universe. during the auto experience, you enter that universe. Now suddenly it's all around you. It seems vast. When before it was a tiny speck. You can identify one little world, one being, and suddenly everything out there is so vast you can't keep it in your mind anymore. So you leave power outside yourself. That's when the gods are created. It's all that parts of us as creator that's been left outside ourselves. And this is where we see it's shaped by our beliefs and attitude towards it. As in some level it's our creation, not as we are now, but on our deeper level. It is shaped by our beliefs in it. Why would we want a belief in gods that punish us and control us and have all these rules which make our life hard? This is not what creation is about. It's good to remember why we came here. It wasn't a struggle, it was to have fun. That's a hard one for some people to get. They think life's all about challenges, but challenge is fun. It's not the same as struggle which weighs you down. The fun is in expanding yourself and finding your power, stretching a bit more, achieving new things. And to have fun, you've got to have time and space. Pure awareness might be in bliss, but it doesn't have fun. The very purpose of existence is to have fun. And since also we learned to create our own reality, we're obviously here to create success, because there's not much fun in creating failure. We looked at this once before in one of the workshops, when you looked at after finding our purpose. There's two aspects which are the same for everybody. We're here to create our own reality, and we're here to have fun. Therefore, we're all here to create success. Notice though, we create it. And that's a challenge. If you think challenge, having fun isn't challenge, well, think about times you haven't had much fun. So don't have fun, you've got to expand yourself, basically. This is all part of our growth. Therefore, all these beings help us on that divine purpose. They help us. They don't want to make us struggle harder, but if that's what you want, they'll do that too, because they're co-creators. When you believe in struggle, they give it to you. This is where we have to be responsible for our own creation, even when we're co-creating. They help us with our creation. So all these beings, then, you have to be clear about what you want. You still have to be responsible for your beliefs. It doesn't take that away from you. Okay, let's go over to questions now.
Yes, thank you very much. We'll go over to the pre-submitted questions first. So bear with me while I just go over there. Okay, question number one. Why is it that the case that one spirit or spiritual practice works best for only one kind of problem? Any one kind of problem, and isn't able to solve more problems at once?
So because they come with a culture which had those problems. You see, as humanity has developed, each culture has experienced different problems. There are answers to those problems. Therefore, you know, if you know there's a culture that had a certain problem to overcome it, they're the ones who know how to deal with it. So they're the spirits which have learned to deal with those things. That's simple. It's about experience.
You'll have to forgive me on the pronunciations of these ones. Next question. Why is the higher form of the Nur-Muwakkil and Narim-Muwakkil called devil? Just thought, it's going to have to make me say it again. I'll start again. Why is the higher form of... Yeah, called devil. Just thought for the Nur-Muwakkil could not be God, the higher form. Is this logical concept wrong?
That's what I was just talking about with the idea of gods. That word wasn't used. No, the higher beings were Marukil. There were light ones and dark ones, and above that there were devils and the dragons. There was just that was the hierarchy. Quite often, many of the gods were dragons before, if you look at it. The human forms came later. If you go back, for instance, to Babylon, the ancient gods were all dragons, of Tiamat, Nergal. These were all kind of, they all had dragon form. Even the older gods in the Hindu tradition, if you go back beyond Hinduism to Vajrayana, they had dragon form. Look at Mahakala and Mahakali, they were very fierce looking, they weren't human. Gradually people have made the gods more human to look, kind of make it easier to kind of work with, look at them, not necessarily less scared of them. But actually that's what the gods were. The name God wasn't used then. The dragons were the highest level, the devils and the Mawakil were kind of
I just popped that question in the chat, because my pronunciation wasn't great on that one. So if anyone wanted to understand the question better, I have put that there. Okay, next question then. How to help magical helpers who need help, ones that we don't know? If we are approached by Fae, who look worn out and are traveling, or other magical helpers who need help, how can we best help them?
Ask them. They might have a person in the lead, but actually when it comes to things like Fae, their main concern is protecting their world. So, you know, worlds are so linked, and when we destroy a world, we're destroying theirs. And they want to help us stop destroying nature. So really, that's a difficult one. You have to actually work with them and actually stopping the destruction of nature, because it's destroying their world too. Find, when we use trees as doorways, since you actually recognize that the same tree in our world is in their world, the tree is in between both. You destroy that tree and it's like they've lost it too. So the main need for the Fae is to protect nature. Other beings just needed feeding, like the djinn, even the elementals feed on scent, natural oils and things. That's why we use incenses. You feed them and that makes them stronger, gives them more energy. That's it, simply new feeding. Sometimes you've done binding because of old spells which have bound them before, because some people's idea of old magic has been very controlling. Like, you know, people talk about djinn bindings, we're not really trying to control it. We're making an alliance. When I attach it to, say a jewelry firm, so you can actually carry that. This is a djinn's idea as well. They attach themselves to something that you can use to call them. They don't live inside it. It's a doorway. They still have the existence of their own world. This whole idea of having to take something and control it is like a human creation. It's not real. But this has been through so many different systems of magic. Some beings are bound under somebody's control, and it's not really nice for them. They're not free. And sometimes you've got to break those bindings, and there are mantras for that. The Mahamrityunjaya mantra, but also in the rune system, remember the Ansatz rune, one which breaks bonds. So we can often free the spirits with these spells, so they're not trapped by these old spells anymore.
And the same question for trees. For example, if a nearby tree is being cut down, how can we help that tree?
Well, actually, it's not the tree's loss, it's ours loss. You see, the tree, the physical part of the tree is only what anchors it to the earth. All these beings, because they're not physical, they're physical, but they don't move in the physical world, have their main existence on the astral. They're still active there. I've sent the tree spirits over the forest that have been cut down, and the spirit's still hanging around out there, and it's lost its roots, but it's there. What's happened is it's no longer connected to us. Therefore, we no longer receive its benefit. Apart from not producing oxygen, they put out spiritual vibes that we are now losing. The tree isn't really suffering. We've lost it. We're harming ourselves.
You were talking about evil. A question has come in. I thought evil was live spelled backwards. Is that backwards spelling just a coincidence?
That's just modern language, you know. In other languages, wasn't the same. The spelling was changed as well. In the ancient Irish name of goddess evil had different spellings. It's changed a few times. Before it was A-E-V-E-L. Before that, it was had to something like A. H-B-O-E-S. You know, it changed anyway. So the spelling is in our languages system, you know, not important. You can say it's lived backwards, yeah, but. That'll mean death, but that isn't evil itself. But death isn't evil either, is it? You'll go there. It's a crossing of another world.
Does Jehovah still want to destroy our world? Is that why so many spiritual people believe that he is evil?
Again, the reason why people think he's evil is actually a lot more complex. The cold comes when things get twisted because people start believing there's something wrong here. They can't believe the old teachings, therefore they tend to swing to the opposite. And many things get associated with this concept of evil because they are looking for kind of an enemy, as it were. This is all part of being in this mass formation psychosis with people in fear. Always have to look for an enemy to group together against and fight off. They don't believe in the devil being their enemy anymore, so they fight something else. Now they recognize all these bad teachings from the past have controlled them, so they say, there's the enemy. Now Jehovah's the enemy. Archon's the enemy, and various other things become the enemy. So yes, although the form of Jehovah in that time, it wasn't really... So Jehovah was never really the creator god. It didn't name in those days. Jehovah was a local weather god, that part of Jerusalem. If you remember from the Bible story, when Cain went away from Eden, across the River Jordan, he met the other people. Their little space and Eden, that was Jehovah's kingdom. Not the whole. He was a local weather god, basically. As I said, there were many gods back then. It came from the basic formula, Yod Heh Vav Heh, the four words, because this was a formula of creation. All gods had as a prefix to the name. There was Baal Yehovah, for instance. You know, it was a common addition part of the name. So this has all been changed. So the kind of people, the idea people have in their mind, are not the original. The word for Jehovah changes in meaning so many times according to how people see it. None of these are fixed. There isn't really this one being called Jehovah anymore, because the people have twisted the idea of it, created even egregores around it. It could be an egregore of a good Jehovah as well as an egregore of a bad Jehovah, because it's all our creation.
Who are all the people looking to destroy our world and doing all the horrible things worshipping? Do they know the truth of what you say about the truth of creation?
Probably don't, otherwise they wouldn't be there. See, what keeps you separate from is the ego. Now, the trouble with the ego is also once you feel superior and above everybody else, and that keeps you separation in itself, because you're not the only one with it all. You're always trying to be the one in charge, and therefore have dominate everybody else and be above them. And that means showing your strength by dominating and controlling and putting people down, making yourself feel big by harming other people, getting really ashamed of putting people down. That's in the lower levels of value. When you get into kind of combative value, you make yourself feel better for putting people down. So people in a kind of low egotistical level, they haven't really evolved. Yet they get into positions of power because that's how our society works. We have leaders, somebody in charge. When they got into that position, they exploit it. And the way our system is that psychopaths are naturally raised to strong positions because they're the ones who are making the money. You have a corporation, for instance, and they find there's somebody who's a complete psychopath as their conscience, but he makes the company more money by his lack of scruples. He's the one who's going to get promoted because he's making more money. So our whole society is actually encouraging psychopaths to raise positions of power. The way out of that is simply not to give new power by society. Learn how to control egregores. Because there are people out there who practice dark forms of magic which are twisted. That's the thing to remember as well. Very few of them know what real magic is. A concept of magic has been shaped by stereotypes like everything else. People read books and have these old stories and they say it works this way, and they mix it with their own experience of domination and control, and they have something which isn't real. Yet everybody accepts it as a truth. Most of the experts who are writers don't know what real magic is. They're still based on stereotypes. Yet so they're in a position where there's a certain level of mental power, because they've got positions of authority, and they can do a lot of harm. And it's not difficult to actually open doors to bring things in that are actually a reflection of their own consciousness. You get these kind of idiots opening doorways, it's going to reflect their own consciousness. Something controlling, dominating, vampiric. That's what comes in. These are egregores.
Is the idea that negative energies have low vibration a misconception? So negative energies, as well as positive ones, can also be high vibrational? Question.
What is negative energy? We judge things as negatives according to the emotions we suppress. Now, people look at an emotion and say, if you fear, it's negative, if you're angry, it's negative. None of them are negative, all have a purpose. Fear is higher energy, actually, because it puts you in fight or flight, so you can actually run faster or fight harder. Anger makes you assertive as you get the job done. A lot of these emotions motivate, they provide energy. Therefore, none of them are really negative, because they all raise your vibration. The lowest vibration would be the unconscious and apathy, we can't afford to do anything. All the other emotions actually motivating you. Anger, fear, all these things. So really, the only low vibrations actually make you sluggish and sleepy and don't want to do anything. Anesthetics, the kind of conditioning which says don't do anything, just makes you rest in your levels. And even this idea of surrender to God, it's like saying don't do anything. People go into apathy. So you see that all the lower vibrations are things which say don't do nothing. All the emotions motivate you to do something, give you energy to do something. So fear and anger could be really positive in the right place because they provide energy. Pain makes you give you a sudden boost of energy to actually make you alert to something. They all have a purpose.
Nerves make you do something. of which I am a lot now. What are the Elohim? As I understand, as singing, or at least bringing formless into its subtlest form.
Elohim is actually a Hebrew word which has a masculine beginning and a feminine ending, which means it's showing the balance of both. Now, in the Kabbalah, there was a kind of different names of God called different levels of creation for the Sephiroth. First one, you have the Ahia, then you have the O of the Yahweh, and then you have the Elohim as the kind of third level, which is the feminine, or the first beginning of the feminine force. It's about form, That's all. It fits with the Zephyr-Rabina, which is the form-creating one. You have awareness, then you have force, then you have form. This is a saying, you have function before you create form. These are the higher levels of creation. Elohim is simply the divine name of that level, the form-creating level.
I was at a talk recently where the speaker said that in order to be sovereign, we should call only upon our higher self and not invite other spiritual helpers to channel through us, as this is possession. So we are not in our sovereignty and are giving away our power. Could you please comment?
Of course you're in sovereignty because you're the one who's choosing it. Anybody takes your choice away is taking your sovereignty away. Anybody says just don't do something, but are going against your sovereignty. I'm not saying don't do anything. I'd rather say explain what the consequences are so you can make a choice. You only give your power away when you let somebody tell you what to do and or let somebody actually undermine your choices. When you choose to work, co-create with other beings, so it's not losing sovereignty. Co-creation is natural. We work together. Otherwise, everybody's stuck on their own. How far would the world go if people didn't do different jobs to incorporate to help each other? Because you do everything on your own, like build your house, grow your food, make your clothes, everything else you need to do. Other people are good at things, and therefore we co-create. Same with other levels of creation. Other beings are better at magic, therefore we co-create with those in other levels. But it's not giving away sovereignties, because you're still being in control. You choose who you work with. That's not possession. Possession has different meanings as well. You see, in voodoo, you allow spirits to possess you because they want to come and talk through you. That's only because you need to talk to other people, bring them to channel them to other people to speak to them. There's a choice there. On your own, you don't need it. When a spirit works with you, it's not possessing you, it's co-creating with you. Possession can be a bad thing when people get controlled by a demon. And that's only because it's unconscious in the first place. They've already given up this self-governance. That's why they get possessed. Things never, they're quite that simple. One has to kind of really look at it. Sovereignty is about you being in charge. Therefore, you make the choices. Of course, you can choose who is in your team. Nobody imposes themselves. It's your choice. And the more helpers you have, the more you can, further you can go in your spiritual growth as well as your material abundance. They're basically saying, don't receive help. Why would you want to do that? That's really closing you off and stopping receiving. And receiving is a feminine energy. When you don't receive, you're shutting off the feminine. But this is another ego thing. The ego is telling you, no, when you're receiving, you're saying somebody's better at it than you. Well, maybe they are. That's why you're receiving, but it's okay. You're not trying to be better than anybody else. Receiving is feminine energy, and actually we receive everything. Look at the process of creation. Because there's a wave there, and the wave must come back from the future, and we have to receive it to change. So they can manifest. We have to both create and receive. A lot of people don't create because they're not receiving. You have to understand the balance. Receiving is a positive, it's a feminine energy. And it's not just earned from other beings. We create, we receive from our own creation. We see from our future. If we understand the giving and receiving cycle, which is a very important part of life, we don't have the conflict. Of course, we're open to receive and therefore open to co-create as well. Give and we receive, and together we create something beautiful.
People who experience a lot of dark energy fights believe people who experience a lot of dark energy fights believe that Isis is evil, believe the druids are evil as well. It is like all the love and light do not see the truth, but the people who experience mostly darkness are just as confused. How to find balance in these situations, how to find your own truth and how to talk to people. It's getting confusing.
Yeah, and it's about, as I was saying, about the mass formation psychosis, it's looking for an enemy outside. Therefore, anything outside becomes a source of your problems. The only way out of that is to be responsible for your creation. Look at your beliefs, your thought forms, anything else that's creating reality. That's why you learn the process of creation and discreation. This is the magic. Otherwise, if you don't be responsible for yourself, you blame something else. That's causing me problems. That's the source of my problems. Therefore, that's evil. None of them are. They can be evil because you're co-creating with them badly. They can create problems in life because this is your creation. If they're co-creating with you, they're only backing up what you're doing anyway. So this important thing then is to look at your creation. The thoughts and beliefs they're holding, which actually manifesting those things. The emotions you suppress, which are part of that creation. All these things reflect you, because they're co-creating with you. Now, Isis had a black side. This is important in Egyptian mythology, because she was a creator. And those who are understanding invoked the black Isis first and transmuted her. Otherwise, you only invoke the white one, the black one, something like that, unexpectedly. It might be a problem. And by the black side doesn't necessarily mean evil. It means like, okay, there's a creation here out of control. There's going to be destruction out of control. If you're not ready for that, what's it going to do? Even creation could be bad if you create the wrong things. So you have to be ready for it, you see. As the black is that black flame which creates on the physical level, shapes matter. And that person more responsible for, because that's what's going to affect us right here. So your spirit is eternal. It doesn't matter what happens with the light, because your spirit's eternal, it's not going to get harmed. On the physical level, we can mess ourselves up. That's why you have to be more responsible for the darkness.
I'm going to go back over to the non-topic related pre-submitted questions because I want to make sure that they get asked because of time. So a question here about psionics. Can I use the psionics plate you gave for the in the free Q&As for the servitors of Invincible Healing and Clearing Psychic Course? Is it powerful enough to use for healing?
It can be, but it won't be as powerful. It all depends on how big your problem is. Basically, the bought version is going to be up to 10 times as strong. And the reason for that is simply because you have to give to receive. I mean, I didn't make it this way. I found that when people pay, the power they get is 10 times as much, even though it's the same plate. See how that works? So you can use it, yes. When you buy it, there's more power. You know, gave it out because of that reason, it works. So yeah, use it. But if you've got a bigger problem, you might want to get the bought version so you've got more power. And then the ultra version, even more powerful, and it overcomes everything. It all depends on the size of your problem. If you've got serious problems, you want the ultra version.
And the next question, can stones, like the ones you recommend in the TR2 healing course, and flower essences be used through this?
Yeah, they can. See if well, these are all about resonance. Gems, stones, flowers all have certain vibrations and resonance they can work with you and change you. So you can just add those as you like to actually make the like combination of energies to get the result you want.
Could Peter please talk about the Kundalini? What exactly is it? Who put it there? What is its ultimate purpose? And is there a maximum level to which it can be developed? Is it like a zip file in our bodies or more like a portal to source?
Yes, it is a portal to source. It is our connection. I won't say it's source itself because source is undefinable. But before we create a physical body, obviously we create many, many layers. And before we even create chakras, we create one chakra, which is how the universe creates as a spin. I've mentioned this before somewhere, but everything begins as a turn. What's turning? Well, the nothingness. But the spin itself creates something. It's the first vortex. As we redefine ourselves into areas, we should split that into seven. Now we have to have a flow between them in order to manage to manifest in different levels, you see. This is the news, it's a connection. It's how power flows from the source into different levels. It is the flow of power from one place to another. And chakras are also doorways to different realms, manifesting levels of energy through our bodies, through our being, let's say body being, because it's not physical, but for us to access different important levels of energy, what they do. The Kundalini is the flow of power. That isn't really limited because there's infinite power available. The reason why it's infinite is because it doesn't really exist. It's illusion. If you think that the pure awareness creates the universe with just a thought, but it's just a dream. It takes no more energy to create that than to create anything else. Once we're stuck in the physical world, we stop measuring things by power. Therefore, we have a limitation. It takes a certain amount of power to get a certain job done. To the source, it doesn't exist. Your thought just happens. It doesn't matter how big or small it is. It's just illusion anyway. Therefore, the Kundalini, by its nature, is unlimited. There are numbers people attach to things by the intensive energy they feel. Like, for instance, they say that when the Kundalini fully rises, it has an intensity of 10,000 orgasms. That'll kill you if you're not ready for it. That's where you've got to prepare the body through yoga and get the shift to a higher level so you're not actually experiencing the physical as such. So, you know, there's levels of intensity, how you experience it, but actually go beyond that in the end, because that's just how it experiences the flow of energy as you are now. As it rises, you step into higher consciousness. You simply aware of you've got nature. You can do anything. then there's no limit. Beyond the waiting that comes leave, there's the experience you call the Malapatula, or the Divine Pearl, where the little point starts at the little point of light, and then the whole body blazes with light and keeps the burn. So the Kundalini has gone everywhere. It's gone beyond Kundalini, it's gone beyond the physical body. You experience that pure essence of creation, you're one with it. When that happens, then you've got infinite energy to do anything. Kundalini is simply a flow of energy. And energy is too is part of creation, it's not creator itself. It's energy, how energy flows from a source through the different levels.
Sorry, it was on mute. Is the Kundalini the violet flame? Is it associated with any colour?
No, because it goes through all chakras, therefore it embraces every colour. Violet flame is a useful tool, but it's not the Kundalini itself. It helps raise the Kundalini. See, what the violet is about is being the highest colour of the visible spectrum, represents the highest of our emotional spiritual spectrums. In other words, the enthusiasm, the highest state we can reach. We use violet to represent that, to actually keep our focus on the higher nature. And fire, apart from being energy, is all ever-changing. So therefore, violet flame is a powerful symbol. We can use it to help activate the Kundalini and help us transform ourselves. But it's not the Kundalini itself, but it can be very much related to it in its effect. It's a symbol of the Kundalini in a way.
Great, that's all the pre-submitted questions completed. So I'm going to scroll all the way back up to the top and we go to the other ones. How long have we got left? We've got 10 minutes left. Peter, have you done a Shava? I hope I'm saying that correct.
Sorry, again, the noise going by.
Hang on. Have you completed a Shava Sadhana? If so, did the corpse sit up?
Corpse, which one? Not Shava? Corpse,
Shava, yeah. Did the corpse sit up?
Oh, no, I haven't done that one, though. And why would you want it? You just can't get the corpses around here. It's not easy, is it? It's like in India, sometimes you can get away with that sort of thing. And I've done some sadhanas there in the cremation grounds, covered in ash and all that, but I haven't done that one. It's not so easy to actually get to it. You know, you can't get the corpses, basically.
Yes. I suffer that for myself.
Okay, that one.
Okay, do you know much about the Morrigan? There's not much reliable information that I can find. What's the connection to the Shining Ones and Danu, if there is one? I feel like the Morrigan is working with me through exciting dreams or nightmares to process buried crap. Any thoughts?
Yeah, the Morrigan basically is not the name of the goddess, it's a Celtic one, but it's also related to the fairy one, such as Danu, and Cerid one, which keeps a cauldron. And this, in the fairy magic, relates to the glamours. And of course, there were many of them in the end. There were nine initiators, but on that level, the glamour is actually a certain stage of maturity in the magic, so the water energy, that of initiation, love, gracious love, healing, all those things. So it is very much an aspect of the feminine. So the Morrigan relates to a bit like the Morgans, you know, the similarity in the name. In the Fae, the landers were called the Morgans, like Morgan Le Fay. They were called Morgans, though. This is the name is actually representing the water element, which is not just as we see water. The glamour is almost like the more mature stage of the feminine energy. Rather than talk about maidens, mothers, and crones, they talk about maidens, glamours, and crones, because it's not about motherhood. The matureness of the energy is far more than that. It's when you're fully in your power. You can give and you can heal and you can. There's so many magical gifts in that level. They call it glamoury, but it's more than what we know as glamoury. It's about shifting emotionally everything, shifting awareness. They're initiators. So the Morrigan is on that level. She's an initiator. Of course, she helps you awaken your power, help do the emotions, help take you through your inner journey, through the darkness and through your wounding and everything. So she's there as an initiator. Makes you grow, she helps you to kind of become whole and step fully into who you are.
Going back to the discussion around vibration, the question is, so raising your vibration doesn't necessarily ensure that you are moving into the light or going to be on the right side of the bifurcation choice.
It helps because the world is dividing into a higher vibration and a lower vibration one. But basically it's like a lower vibration means that it's like the lower states of ego, such as the kind of combative value and the kind of, you know, if you looked at my work on the ego before,
there's different ways we earn value. The lowest levels are the supplicated value and the competitive value. They're both low vibration. The highest one we want to reach is the cooperative value, where you raise your value by raising others' value around you. That's where you do most good, and therefore you earn real value. If you need to actually suck up to others to gain value, or you need to put people down to gain value, that's keeping you down. Both those are going to be in the one side of vibration. Those are low vibrations. And think about how we get there. People's main problems is because of an ego and jumping everybody else, or because they're sucking up to everybody else and not, you know, giving the power away. These are the lower ego levels, the lower levels of earning value, which can actually give you very little value, but give you some. Everybody wants value, you see. We all have some mechanism of earning that value. The lowest levels are supplicative, and then the combative, then you have competitive value and cooperative value. You want to be on the highest level, really, cooperative value. So think about that. How do you earn your value? Make sure you earn it by cooperative value. It means, in other words, as you help everybody else and raise their value, it automatically gives you higher value. You have to put them down in order to make you feel yourself feel better, not working. You have to suck up to others to get their attention, make you feel better, not working. You earn your value by raising the value of all those around you.
What is happening when people like Doreen Virtue, who previously taught about angels or they worship deities, the goddess, etc., suddenly find or experience Jesus Christ and repent and consider everything prior to be demonic?
That's part of the message of the church, that's why. So out there, you know, only in Christ can you get there. When people find something they can't handle, which is usually their own shadow, suddenly they need an answer. And that's when they fall back to the herd instinct. See, quite often when people are finding enlightenment, they think they're not on their own, they don't need to listen up to the authorities. When things go wrong, suddenly they run back to the herd instinct and listen to somebody else. They need a leader. And they follow the same old stuff. What happens when you break the light, darkness follows, because it's nature of shadow. This happened many times before. Like, I remember the first one, Mary Baker Eddy, who started the Christian Science movement. She was invoking divine light, and she ended her life for the last few years of suffering what we call malicious animal magnetism. It should be the other side of the divine love she was invoking all the time. All magicians see the duality there. You invoke the light, the dark follows, you have to both become whole. So somebody's in this new age stuff into the light and angels and everything. Sooner or later, the darkness follows, and it's not working. So they go for any answer they can. They haven't found the real source of information. That's all hidden. They go back to the church and say, oh, no, only Christ will save you. He'll take all these problems away. So you give up your power again and follow the herd. That's the herd instinct again. The social veil. It's one of the things, one of the veils to perception.
We have time for one more question and then we will need to close. So if your question has not been answered during this Q&A, don't worry. Well, you can put it into the Q&A, into the MeWe group, and then Peter will be able to answer that there. So for the final question, Peter, since doing the Dragon Workshop, I learned the Dragon Sutra by heart and speak it quite often in my mind. But yesterday, after such a session, I just took a glass of water in my hand and the bottom of the glass broke off. Could it be that the Dragon Sutra is just too strong to do it all the time?
It's not too strong. It's raising your vibration, but you have to be adapt to the things around you. What's happening, your vibration has to adapt to actually the physical matter around you so you don't destroy it. In that way, you can make things too strong. It's not going to harm you. Your vibration becomes too strong to handle things around you, and you have to kind of settle in and balance. It wouldn't happen very often, don't worry. This is a little sign to happen to show there's strong energy flowing through you, and you get more control with time. Nothing really nasty will happen. It'd be just small things like that.
Okay, great. So I'm just going to remove Peter's spotlight and come back to everybody. So that's the end of today's Q&A. As I said, if your question, put my camera on, that would help, wouldn't it? If your question has not been answered, please do put it in the MeWe group and then Peter will be able to answer them there. We do have our workshop in 30 minutes time. So if you are a magical student, please make sure you have registered. If you would like to join us anyway for healing the adolescent, then there is still time to purchase and you can join us in 30 minutes. The link will be coming back into the chat right now. Stefan, you asked if you could watch my Muay Thai fight, which is in about 3 hours time. There's the link. If any of you want to go onto Instagram, you can follow the Muay Thai school that I am fighting with at the moment. And you can watch me fight in about 3 hours and I'm shitting myself. just to put it bluntly, I'm a little bit nervous and a little bit scared. That's why I'm walking around my room and stretching at the same time. If anyone wants to watch, you can. I can't guarantee you what time I'm fighting because I don't know what fight I am. I don't know how long the previous fights are going to last. 1 minute, 10 minutes, who knows? So I can't tell you what time, but I do know that the event starts at 9:30 p.m. Thailand time. So you can calculate that. Thank you very much. And that is everything. Please do register for the workshops. Buy the workshops, join us in 30 minutes. Until January, we'll see you in MeWe. Merry Christmas. Oh my gosh, it seems so weird to say that, right? Merry, Merry Christmas to all of you, because we won't speak to you again, some of you, until January in the Q&A. Otherwise, hopefully we'll see some of you tomorrow on Sunday, where the time is back to normal at 10 a.m. UK time for our students' Q&A, where Peter will be talking about unicorns. And I can't wait. Here's hoping I don't have a black eye. So, yay! May one. The magical helpers help have your back. Have you got one from training? Have you? I've got my hair all done in the cornrows. Look, Peter's got a black eye. I've got my hair ready. If anyone wants to send me any well wishes, that's great. But I can't be dealing with any negativity. Yeah, I don't need any help with that. All right. Thank you very much, everybody, for your well wishes. Kick some ass. I will. I probably will kick her ass. So we'll see you tomorrow. We'll see you in January.
Yep.
Have a fabulous and we'll see you in the workshop in half an hour. Take care, everyone. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.
See you soon. Bye.